The Book Nook on WYSO was presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome two guests to the program today who join us on the telephone, Meredith Oakes and Kay Miller. And the two of you have put together a very unusual book, and we're talking to you about it right now because we're coming up on Passover. Tell us about this project. How did this happen? How did you decide to do this?
I was talking to a friend on the phone who works in catering, and he had just worked a Passover Seder, and he was telling me how he really enjoyed seeing the ancient Egyptian diorama centerpiece with the matzah pyramids and the palm trees. And when I got off the phone, I was thinking that Passover is one of the more fun Jewish holidays. How could it be even more fun? And then the light bulb went on. I got the idea, and I immediately called Meredith because she's celebrated Passover every year of her life. We both have a very strong interest in rock and roll, and it just rolled right along from there.
And the result is the Rock and Roll Haggadah, Your Guide to a Seder That Rocks, written by Meredith Oakes, illustrated by Kay Miller. And we have Passover coming up on April 1st. And the theme of Passover, and I learned this when I was a kid, is escape, right?
It's really freedom, right?
Freedom?
Freedom from, well, escape, sure. But that's because the Israelites were not free in the story of Passover. They were enslaved in Egypt for about 400 years. And there's actually some archaeological evidence that has been found to back it up, and that's in the book too. When I thought about the Passover Seder, I thought about being a kid, and in my house, Seders were very long, but they were also very fun. And you know, for the intellectually curious, they were fascinating to me anyway. And I wanted to put in some of the science and some of the other things that are that go into like these traditions. Why do we do this? What's this holiday about? Is there any historical evidence that all this stuff actually happened? And there is some. So, yes, it is about freedom. It is about escape, but only escape from tyranny or whatever is bothering you, you know, addiction. There are many other things that you could escape from. But yeah, ultimately, it's about freedom.
You're talking about for modern people and not the Israelites.
Yeah. I thought about it in terms of ancient through now and okay. the entire, you know, arc of the Jewish people from, you know, BC to modern times and how it connects. You know, we're a pretty unusual tribe in that we have survived a lot and we're still here and we're still celebrating these traditions that are a millennia old.
Well, I've never been to a Seder, but I want to talk about that. But first, I want to talk about what my favorite part was when I was a kid when I heard about it, and that was the plagues.
The plagues are very rock and roll.
Tell us about the plagues.
Pharaoh said, all right, get out. Get okay. out of my country. Get out of here. But then he changed his mind, and he went after the Israelites and confronted them at the Red Sea. And if you have seen the movie The Ten Commandments, you know how that ends. Not well for the Egyptian army.
Oh, yeah, the Red Sea. Uh-huh. That's a fantastic movie. I remember.
It is. And it's, you know, I recommend all folks who have an interest in Passover and haven't seen it to watch it. It's a lot easier than reading all the books that I read before writing this book. So well, read our book and watch The Ten Commandments.
And Metallica's song, Creeping Death, is based on the plagues. And that movie was an inspiration to them, right?
Yeah. Now, right, because when the creeping death comes to take all the firstborn, which is, it's horrifying, admittedly. Nobody wants that to happen to anybody. But a fog comes out in the film, and they were so inspired by it that they wrote this song about it, this iconic Metallica song.
Ah, okay. And there we have one of the rock and roll tie-ins. Let's talk about Seder and how you market and the special foods and what it involves.
Well, a lot of the foods, and this interests me because I'm also a food writer in my life and have been for many years, they evolved through, you know, the immigration story of Jewish people. So we were all over the world after we had been kicked out of Israel twice. And the second time led to almost 1,000 years of diaspora. And everywhere we went, we picked up some culinary tradition. And in keeping with kosher, right, kosher law, which is part of Orthodox Judaism, not every Jewish person keeps kosher. I grew up kosher. I'm not now, but I know a lot about it from having, you know, grown up with these dietary restrictions. And so it was really interesting to me that gefilte fish, which is this iconic, you know, fish ball that's served in, you know, during Passover and at other times, the evolution of it. When Jews lived in Eastern Europe, it was a Catholic Lenten dish where they made this like fish ball and ate it on Lent and on Fridays, right? You're not supposed to eat meat on Fridays, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And for Jewish people, they brought it from Europe to America, and they would cook it like on Friday, and then Friday night and Saturday are the Sabbath, and you don't cook, you don't light a fire, you don't do any work. So they would prepare these like fish balls out of carp. Like grandmas on Lower East Side would buy live carp from the fish guy, put them in the bathtub all week, and make a filter fish. And so it was fascinating to me to learn about the evolution of these culinary traditions. Where did they come from? Why? And it's a mix of like where we ended up living and our own, culture and our own religion. And the mix of that was really interesting to me. So that's all in the book.
And I moved to New York from Ohio in September of 78. I moved to the East Village because I wanted to see my favorite bands live, like Television and Patti Smith, the Ramones. And I lived in a tenement apartment when I moved to New York with a bathtub in the kitchen. So my bathtub may have previously had carp swimming in it.
No doubt.
I'm hearing Yiddish ghosts in the background as well, splashing with the carp.
Yep, they're real.
Yeah. Okay, so what's the rock and roll tie-in? How did you do this? And explain, because you've brought us all these rock and rollers, many of whom were Jewish, and some of whom were not, but they dug seders.
Yeah, it's a trend the last decade or two that I was reading about how some non-Jews were practicing seders, because the Last Supper was actually a seder, or so it's thought to be. And the interest in Passover extended beyond Judaism and Jewish culture and Jewish people. And, you know, at my own family seder, we always have people who are not Jewish at the seder. There's this tradition of welcoming the stranger in Judaism, where you're, if someone's hungry, you feed them. If someone needs a place to go, you welcome them into your table. And it's always really interesting to see someone participate in a Seder and have, you know, sort of be enlightened about the whole thing and be interested in it. But the rock and roll tie-in, Kay, you want to talk about that? Because, you know, your illustrations really blend the two so beautifully.
Well, Meredith came up with the idea of a sidebar called Honorable Mention.
Mm-hmm. Wait, Honorable Mention.
he's a real mensch. Uh-huh, uh-huh, yeah.
So we have a lot of sidebars throughout the book with rock and roll anecdotes that relate to the Seder. For instance, Gene Simmons inviting Cher to his mother's house for Passover. Harry Styles, when he was just becoming famous, he lived with a Jewish family for 2 years. The husband was a producer of his, and he celebrated Passover with that family, and he enjoyed living with them because it kept him grounded while he was, you know, shooting, you know, up the same ladder at a, you know, lightning speed. So it kept him grounded, and he actually sang the four questions. There's a lot of rock and roll in the book, a ton of song titles, and we have a playlist, a Seder Jams playlist that's also on Spotify.
Great. That's all these sort of themed either by title or by philosophy or by something to the all the ideas and historical stuff in the Passover holiday. And we also dug into artists like Lou Reed and Madonna and people who you wouldn't necessarily think, because Lou Reed was pretty godless by his own admission, and Madonna is into Kabbalah, but she grew up very, very Catholic. But these folks, they, you know, Judaism and Passover and these themes of freedom and escape, they really inform the art of these folks. Madonna's Ray of Light is like this very deeply Kabbalah-inspired album. And Lou Reed, even though he was very, you know, very much an atheist, he craved Jewish tradition, and he loved Passover. He never missed a Passover, and part of his love for this holiday resulted in the Downtown Seder, started at the Knitting Factory in New York, which was a club, and now is at City Winery, which is the owner of that old club's new club. And so it was just great to learn that Judaism, in a very powerful and profound way, informed the music of these artists that you would never have thought about. So that's all in the book, too.
And Meredith, you know a little bit about music, don't you? Tell us about your music hosting experiences and the stations you've worked at and the things you've done.
I worked at a lot of radio stations in my adult life. I went to college looking for a good radio station to work at. So I ended up at UMass, and I got an overnight show like the first week I was at college because I had grown up obsessed with music. I used to, and remember, there was no internet when I was growing up. I had to do all this legwork manually. I would listen to the radio and write down all the artists and the songs, and I would go to concerts like from the time I was about 12 because no one asked for ID back then. You know, my dad would drop me off, and I would cringe and say, drop me off a block away. I don't want anyone to see me getting out of your car. but then he would come pick me up, you know, and he was, my parents were, while they didn't understand my interest in music, they were supportive, got me a guitar. I've always played music. I've been in bands. I've toured. I've made records. And then for work, I decided to make this my life's work. So I ended up getting DJ gigs all over the New York area, ended up with a talk show at Sirius XM and doing commentary for NPR and working at magazines like Guitar World and Rolling Stone. And I got to meet a lot of very famous, very fascinating people. And so in a way, the book has a lot of my lifetime of hanging out with these people. Some were formal interviews. Some were just a hang at a party. But I did, you know, I cataloged a lot of information. And really all the books I've written, three of them about music before I wrote the Rock and Roll Haggadah with Kay, they all have like this lifetime, this like treasure trove of anecdotes and information in them.
Did you work with Rita Houston?
I loved Rita, yes. Rita got me a gig at WFUV. I worked there for 2 years.
Yeah, I remember Rita. I used to see her at conferences all the time. She was kind of like the queen of the format.
You know, she was such a good person. Mm-hmm. She was a beaming, like, ray of light. You know, light is a theme in the book because it's a theme in Judaism to light the world or repair the world, which is Tikkun Olam. We get into that with Bruce Springsteen's band and Max Weinberg. He talks a lot about Tikkun Olam in his own life. And Rita embodied Tikkun Olam. She literally lit the world and repaired the world. And I miss her so much.
The book is Rock and Roll Haggadah, Your Guide to a Seder That Rocks, We've been joined by Meredith Oakes and Kay Miller. And the one musician, when I got the book, the one I expected to be in here, you didn't disappoint me, was Leonard Cohen.
Right. That's a big chapter about Tikkun Olam as well. I'm glad you like that, because of course the first thing anyone does when they open up a book like this is my favorite artist in here. Mm-hmm. And if they are, you're great. And if they're not, you screwed up. So I'm glad that you like that. And I was also interested to learn from Leonard Cohen's rabbi. And you know, if you're a fan, that he explored many religions in his life, uh-huh. including being in a Zen monastery for years. And, you know, but his rabbi and him explored Kabbalah together the last 10 years of his life. And his rabbi invited Leonard Cohen to a Seder at his own house, right? This is what we do. You don't know about? Well, Leonard knew about it, but he said, well, just come on over. You know, we make too much food, so we always like to have additional people visit. And Leonard Cohen did a yoga headstand at the Seder in his chair, which I thought was fantastic. He literally turned it upside down. That's what rock and roll is.
Unbelievable. Well, I knew a guy back in Des Moines who used to play Lady of Spain on an accordion standing on his head, Abe Goldstein. He was a legend.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
I got to see a YouTube video of this if
yeah.
there is.
I don't think it exists, but yeah. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit more about seders and about the food and about what it's all about. What do you do?
I'm not nearly as experienced in it as Meredith. I mean, I grew up as a Reformed Jewish person. I remember Seder kind of vaguely from my childhood, and I'm a Sunday school dropout. Huh. But there's a lot of symbolism in the food. And why don't you elaborate, Meredith, on that?
It's true. Everything you eat during Seder is symbolic of springtime, of circle of life, of escape from Egypt, of the tears of tyranny, right? We talk a lot about tyranny in the book because it's as relevant now as it ever was. And so all the things you eat have not only the history of being, of evolving through the diaspora experience of Jewish people, but also the symbolism of the Passover story itself. So you eat weird stuff, like you take parsley and dip it in salt water, and it's supposed to represent springtime, but also the salty tears of the enslaved Israelites and also the tears of the Egyptians, because, you know, a lot of them were killed during this story, and especially the kids. So, you know, it's a thing in Judaism, like, don't be too happy. That's a cultural thing, right? That's something we grew up with. Like, you know, don't come up too fast. You'll get the bends. Don't, if you're winning, don't show it off too much. If you give to charity, do it anonymously. That's like the highest form of what's called tzedakah, which is charitable giving.
Hmm.
And that's just like a culture thing, but it evolved out of real history and also Bible stories. And somewhere in that, like, you know, hat trick of stuff, there is the truth. So anyway, that's the symbolism of Seder food is vast, and that's a little bit of it, like a hard-boiled egg. Why would you eat a hard-boiled egg at a meal? It's just weird, you know?
Because they're delicious. They are delicious.
I guess so, but when you know that brisket is cooking and chicken and all this other delicious stuff is coming out later, I'm like, I don't want this egg and this weird fishbowl. It's also when you have a Seder, you're going to read for about an hour, right? You're reading the story of the Passover. That's the onus on every Jewish person, is to tell the story of the Passover every mm-hmm. year. So we don't forget. You know, people, as Peter Himmelman, a wonderful musician who I interviewed for the book, he said, Jews are people of long memory. And that really resonated with me, because we're still here after almost 6,000 years. And wow. It's a very astonishing tale. And part of the reason is because we tell our stories, we write them down, we read them, and we don't forget. So everything you eat, it may seem just like a hard-boiled egg, but it has all this representation of stuff, and all of that is in the book, too.
Wow.
Yeah, like the cycle of life with the egg.
I got it.
And the fact that Perosis is it's supposed to represent the mortar that the Jewish slaves used to build with. And it's made with finely chopped apples, cinnamon, a little red wine, some chopped nuts, and you eat it on matzah, and it's delicious, actually. And these symbolic foods, some of them are on the Seder plate, and I made a record album Seder plate illustration, and it's pretty easy, but we give instructions on how you can make your own record album Seder plate.
Are you talking using the actual LP, the vinyl LP, to make the plate?
Yeah, you can just put some little small bowls around the record album to hold the various symbolic foods.
Okay. Well, can you figure out which my favorite food would be? I've had all these foods, but not as a Seder. Do you know which one I would prefer the most out of your list of foods?
The lamb shank, maybe?
Nope.
Oh.
Nope.
Sorry, Kay, you guess.
The bitter horseradish. I love horseradish.
Oh, man, that becomes an Olympic event at a Seder.
I heard that. Some guy ate a giant ball of it, right? You described that in the book.
Right, Jeff Tweedy and his sons.
Right.
Jeff Tweedy of Wilco converted to Judaism as an adult because he married a Jewish woman and agreed to raise the kids Jewish. And he did it in solidarity with his sons. And they have a big contest of who can stuff the most horseradish into their mouths. And
that,
it's like a macho thing. It happens at Seders all over. There are, catastrophic horseradish events.
Oh, wow. Okay. See, I could dig that. The book is...
But, the whole thing is like, we wanted to make Passover accessible for anyone. So even if you've never hosted a Seder before, you can get every single bit of information you need in this little, it's actually pretty substantial prologue of the book. It has all the fun facts, the history, the information on what you need to buy, what you need to cook. And it lays it out in an understandable and fun way.
How do our listeners locate your Spotify playlist? How is that organized? They just go on Spotify and they look for Haggadah on Spotify. What do they look for?
Yeah, look through the Rock and Roll Haggadah or Haggadah.
Oh, okay.
The Rock and Roll Haggadah.
All right.
Or Seder Jams, right?
Oh, yeah, Seder Jams. That's it. Seder Jams. S-E-D-E-R, Seder Jams.
Seder Jams. Okay, that'll work.
That'll work.
And I'm wondering, Meredith, you talked about meeting all these musicians and all these people that you idolized. Who was the one at the very top of the list where when you were with them, you're just like, I can't believe I'm here in the same room with this person? Who was it?
That doesn't happen to me until after. Like when I've interviewed many celebrities and I don't get too starstruck, but in the years, literally years after, I think about, wow, that was really cool. And the one I'm thinking of now has nothing to do with this book. Was I was at a party and Robert Plant was at the party and we just started talking and we talked for a really long time about music, just like normal. And it didn't occur to me that he was, I knew who he was, but then I didn't freak out till after.
That's a good one. And when I used to take music calls, one time I got a music call from, I think they had some kind of a record label at CBGB's, and I got this music call from a woman, and she told me her name, and she said who she was, and I'm like, are you the same Genya Ravon that was with 10cc? Did you ever see them?
Oh, I know. I'm like a hair.
Or not 10cc, 10 Wheel Drive she was with.
She is such an amazing human being. And she's Jewish. She's an immigrant. And her story is like a classic Jewish American immigration story. And she is so cool and so under not known enough. She should be known way more.
I agree. And she should be in your book.
She should be.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find any Passover stories about her.
Yeah, there probably aren't any. But she
was
calls me
one of the first girl bands, right? Goldie and the, oh God, I can't remember.
Uh-huh.
I think she might be on our playlist, or Goldie and, I can't remember the band, but it had Goldie in it, and she was Goldie.
Well, she was doing a music call. She's like, are you playing our album? I was like, you're Kenya Ravad. Why are you calling me for this? I was like, couldn't believe it.
She did everything. She was a producer, a performer. Yeah, she did it all.
Unbelievable. Okay, so let's say we have a person who doesn't know anything about this stuff, and they're in a bookstore, and they see your book. There's a display of your books there, and you're standing nearby, and they look puzzled. What would you say to them to encourage them to pick the book up and read it?
First of all, I'd say don't be scared off because the book is backwards, because there's Hebrew in it. It goes right to left. So the book is, when you open it, it's backwards. And we talked about that a lot with the publisher. Do we make it backwards? Do we? You know? But once you get past that, there's so much fun information in it about rock and roll music, about the Passover holiday, about history, archaeology, spirituality. It's just all the things that I felt were really beautiful about Judaism. The stuff that, and again, I'm not really a religious person, but I did grow up with it, and I kept what I felt was the most applicable to modern life and the most beautiful stuff, you know, the things that make me happy and make me live a better life. And I really tried to infuse all of that into this book. So even if you're not going to make a Seder, it's worth reading just for all of that.
And it's an inclusive Haggadah. We have various cultures. We have Bob Marley in the book. It's pretty diverse. We have Little Richard. It's a welcoming, inclusive Haggadah.
Well, you've got to have Bob Marley for Exodus. I mean, that's a must, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's in the foreword. That's like we got to that first.
What a song. Well, this is quite a different book than anything I've ever experienced. It's The Rock and Roll Haggadah, Your Guide to a Seder That Rocks by Meredith Oakes and Kay Miller, who have joined us on the program today. Meredith wrote it and Kay illustrated it. And on the cover, you can see Kay's picture. And I'm guessing this is Moses, and he's gotten the Ten Commandments. And he's turned it into a guitar.
Yes, he's got a Ten Commandments tablet guitar.
So if you're looking for the book, that's the first thing you'll see on the cover. Well, we really appreciate your time and your book.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Book Nook on WYSO, and Meredith Oakes and Kay Miller wrote the book, The Rock and Roll Haggadah, Your Guide to a Seder That Rocks. Now I'm going to go out and get myself a sandwich, and I'm going to smear all kinds of horseradish on it. What would they call that? Would they call that a schmear?
A schmear.
Uh-huh.
Enjoy.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Vic.
Thank you.
For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.